From the Premier League, it's the official Fantasy Premier League podcast. Today, game done change got more fierce with the biggest FPL round in years. With 17 games over 6 days, we'll be asking what to do and when, and whether points hits actually pay for themselves. It's all coming up in the official Fantasy Premier League podcast from the Premier League. Hello there. Thanks so much for joining us on the official FPL podcast. We've got round 26 looming, and as mentioned, it's huge, potentially pivotal. Here to tell us what to do about it, we've got football author and journalist Tom Williams.
Hello, James.
Premier League and Fantasy Premier League reporter and presenter Kelly Summers.
Hi, James.
Hi, Kelly. And from the FPL family, Sam Bonfield.
Hiya, James.
Hello. Crikey. Wow. Starts 12:30 Saturday afternoon with Man City Wolves. It stretches all the way through to Thursday night with three fixtures. It's huge. Are you excited?
Can't
wait. And a bit nervous.
Tom, somewhere in the middle, perhaps?
Feels a bit make or break for me, this double game, because I use my wild card in specifically in order to prepare for this double game week. So if I don't have a sort of historic game week, then my entire season could be in tatters.
So you used your wild card for last game week in preparation for this?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. All right.
I sensed that the double game week was coming, partly through my own intuition, but also mainly because I follow Ben Krellin on Twitter, and he's been saying that for the last few weeks. So use the wild card in game week 25, which was partly to bring in some Leeds players for the Leeds double game week in game week 25, and also to prepare my team for double game week 26.
Was it also to get in Leicester midfielders?
It was not, sadly. That was one of the many wild card mistakes I made, but I will be rectifying that this week.
Okay, how many points did you pick up actually, Tom?
66. It's quite disappointing. Had it not been for Stroik and Rafinha and Bamford on Tuesday night, it would have been even worse.
Right, but you brought them in for that reason. So fair dues. Kelly Summers, let's talk about how many points you got.
I got 92, James. Had I got my captaincy a bit better, I would have got to 100. And it's actually back-to-back weeks now. I got 91 the week before. So it's just a couple of captaincy decisions that have kind of let me down, and benching again. I know myself and Sam have talked before about bench nightmares. So I left Calvert-Lewin and Stones on the bench this week, so it could have been even better. But it's hard not to be happy with that. Leeds massively saved me last night.
Okay. But you've got Maddison in your side.
Yeah, which is brilliant. But not so brilliant when you see him limping off with that hip injury. So I'm very much listening out for Brendan Rodgers' press conference this week ahead of Europa League, see if he features, because I don't want to have to waste a transfer to get rid of him, because I bought him in quite a few weeks ago now. And as Tom's just alluded to there with the double game week, he's definitely a player I want. And I'm also got one eye on 29, so I don't want to waste transfers on players that don't play in 29. But if Maddison's out, I'd be very, very tempted to bring in Barnes, given his form. So, yeah, good week, but that was probably the one real negative of it.
29 has been this kind of iceberg on the horizon for a while, and it's getting closer and closer. The good news is that we do now actually have an official confirmation of another fixture in there. So we're now up to four. Spurs against Aston Villa now in game week 29, which opens up a whole world of options. Sam, you picked up only 62 points this week. You dropped to 78k in the world. How are you feeling?
It was pretty much a disaster, to be honest, James. It was one of those game weeks where I sat and watched the games on the TV, and every time I watched them, I thought, why has my player not done anything? How has there not been points for them in that game? Because game after game, it seemed like they were in a good place. I'd always planned to play my bench boost in game week 25. It was on the agenda for ages now. And then going into it, I just had a couple of flags. And the last thing you want to do is play a bench boost only to find that your players are coming off your bench anyway. So I made the decision not to, which cost me massively, because I had 22 points sat on my bench again this week. So had I bench boosted, it would have been a decent week, probably would have resulted in a green arrow. As it is, it was it was probably a good week to have a bad week because there were a lot of FPL managers in the same boat as me with a lot of premium assets not returning. So it cost me about 25k in rank, but it wasn't horrendous. And going into this week, hopefully with the amount of games that we have, it should be a points galore in theory this week coming, but we'll see.
Well, there's a potential for really big returns, but equally potential to really lose ground on your rivals if you get it wrong.
Mm.
So the decisions, the next few minutes of chat could be absolutely crucial for all of our seasons. Effectively, as we discuss next up, the Game Week 26 fixtures. Game Week 26 begins 11 a.m. Saturday morning UK time. Loads of fixtures. I'm not going to read them all. There's just too many. But let me tell you that 14 teams double. Six don't, you know, by consequence. Those six are Saints, who have Everton. They're at Everton. They do double, though, the following week, we now know, in Game Week 27. Newcastle, who are against Wolves. Brighton, who will be travelling to West Brom. Leeds, who are up against a Grealish Luz Villa. Arsenal at Leicester. And West Ham at Man City. Any of those teams, do you think, still merit a place in your side? Players from those teams still merit, based on those fixtures, even though they don't double?
I think you have to be careful to ignore them. I know we're all desperate to get in players that play double. And of course, the majority of our team should be made up by those and they should be the transfers we're targeting. But for me, as someone that is building for 29, like a lot of managers are, three Leeds players last night in that game got big points, Bamford, Dallas and Rafinha. I've got all three of them, so I was very fortunate. I'm certainly not going to be shipping them out. Yes, I was originally going to bench all three, but actually now I'm looking at it and thinking, they've got a really good fixture. As you mentioned, Villa could still be without Grealish. So I'm not going to be hurrying to get rid of them. Dallas in particular, he went back to central midfield against Saints after Click got injured. He's played in so many positions and he was unlucky not to get more returns. Got all three bonus in that. Bamford, 21 attacking returns this season. I think I'm going to bench him, but that's going to be a tricky decision because only Salah and Fernandes have scored more than him. And at home, he's produced a goal or assist in five of his last six home matches. So if you've got these players, don't ignore them. I'm not necessarily saying bring them in, but just if you bench them, this is what you're benching.
Okay. If only there was some way of knowing in advance whether Grealish will be available for that game or not. Tom, you've just brought in Leeds players.
Yes. So I didn't manage to find room for Stuart Dallas in my defence. So I went for the budget option of Pascal Struijk. And although he picked up a clean sheet in that game against Southampton, I did kick myself when Stuart Dallas scored that goal. Planning to upgrade Pascal Struijk probably to Ruben Dias this week. And I'm going to move Rafinha and Bamford onto my bench, but I am bench boosting.
Ooh.
So hopefully there won't be any regrets about that. Because as Kelly says, you know, Leeds have shown some excellent form of late, and particularly those two are so key to everything they do. I think if you take those two out of your team, or any other Leeds players out of your team, because they're not playing twice, you could come to regret that.
Crikey. What's your policy here, Sam? It's worth noting, Phil Banger's pointing this out, that on the previous similar-sized double game week, which was back in game week 19, of the top scorers, it was only Aubameyang who broke in from those with a single fixture.
There are always single game weekers that perform really well. And I think the thing for me that you have to kind of consider as an FPL manager is it worth taking a points hit to bring in a player that's got a double game week by taking out a player that's got a single game week? So if you've got a defender who, you know, looks like they've got a decent game, so for example, a Brighton defender looks like they've got a decent game against West Brom in game week 26, could return a clean sheet. If it's Lewis Dunk, also has the potential for some attacking returns there. Is it worth transferring them out, given they play in 29, for a hit to bring in somebody like, I don't know, somebody that's playing twice, maybe a Spurs defender? Well, the reality is that you don't necessarily guarantee two clean sheets for your defenders across those two games. So you can buy into a defence that's likely to provide you two, but sometimes if you're taking a hit for them, it's worth just sticking with the single game weeker, particularly if it aids your prep in the future. And as the guys were saying about Leeds, I think, you know, they are a team that it could really hurt you to bench them this time around. Aston Villa are still going to be without Matty Cash as well in this week. And he has made such a big difference to that defence. They've been rock solid partly because of how together they have been. And we've seen in the last couple of game weeks without him, even though they kept a clean sheet against Brighton, that was very much because Martinez was unbelievable in that game. So there is scope for Leeds to get something against Aston Villa this time around. And I'd be reluctant to sell players that are on a single, a decent single, unless it's for a free moving forward.
So Leeds figure strongly in our plans, despite the fact they've only got that one game. But of the teams that do have double fixtures, and there are so many of them, my calculation is that the teams with the best kind of combination of matches are Spurs and Everton. Everton, who are at home to Saints and then at West Brom and are coming fresh from that victory over Liverpool in the derby, but equally had lost to Fulham just before that. So there's an element of who knows with Ancelotti's side, but good fixtures anyway. The other one being at Spurs, who have Burnley at home and then Fulham away, which is by no means a gimme, but still something that, you know, maybe the likes of Kane, Son, or even scratch his chin, Gareth Bale could be, you know, interesting for.
Yeah, I think Spurs are really fascinating for this week. Have been on an absolutely terrible run over the last six game weeks. But the second half against West Ham were increasingly showing what they could do going forward. They were a lot better, a lot more attacking. But Harry Kane was in the top 10 for XG underachievers in that game, meaning that he should have got returns and didn't. When you look at his previous results against Burnley and Fulham combined, he's played 14 matches against both of the sides. And in those games, scored 14 goals and got 3 assists. So he has a really good record against these clubs. And when we think back to last season, Spurs hit 5 past Burnley in the same fixture. So although Burnley can be and have been in the past really good defensively, they were lucky not to concede against West Brom in game week 25, probably because West Brom were down to 10 men. And even then they should have scored. So I don't think that, you know, this is a game where we should write off Spurs assets just because the form's been bad, because going into this, they are fixtures that they should do well in. And we did see a bit of a rejuvenation in them in the second half against West Ham in 25.
Sam, what do you think about the effect of Bale? Because he was the player that changed things in the second half. And that was the first glimpse I felt that we've seen of the old Bale since being at Spurs. So what effect will he have, even if you're not thinking of bringing in Bale, what effect do you think he'll have on Kane and Son?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question because he was really, really good in the Europa League last time around. Interestingly, I noticed that Spurs have used him on the graphic for the Europa League for this week's fixture against Wolfsburg too. For me, he is finally starting to click, as you say. I think this was the first time in last week in those two matches where we actually saw the old Bale again. He's been finishing training sessions as well of late, which again is a positive sign in terms of his fitness levels, because I think that's been the issue. More than it's been about injuries, it's been more about his fitness and his availability. He had a marked difference on Kane as well. Kane's positioning changed completely when Bale was on the field, because Bale did all of that legwork that we usually see Kane doing, meaning we saw Kane in a more traditional number nine role, hence why he was so high up for underachievers in that game week, because he had so many opportunities that he just didn't convert. Now, on another day, they all go in, Kane gets a hat trick, and as FPL managers, we're loving it. I think the difficulty with Bale is that a lot of FPL managers will already own Kane and Son, or one of the two, and then buying into another one, particularly in that midfield area, is tough because there are so many other FPL assets that you probably want in that midfield.
Bale currently owned by just 0.3% of managers worldwide. His price is a hefty 9.3 million. But you mentioned Son there, who's blanked now for 8 times in the last 11 matches. And it's a compelling case you make for keeping Kane on. But can you say the same thing for Son, do you think, at this point?
Son did look really tired by the end of that West Ham game. And so it'd be interesting to see whether he takes part in the Europa League on Wednesday evening. But he was third for chances created in game week 25 with 4. Only Shaw, who was excellent for Manchester United, and Rafinha, who was just unbelievable in game week 25 and of course played a game extra, could beat him. So he was still doing the right things, had one that came off the post, could have easily returned at that point. So I think for me, it would be a risk to take Son out ahead of a double game week, particularly against Burnley and Fulham. Those are two fixtures where if he's ever going to return, you would expect it to be in that game week. So taking him out now feels a bit risky to me.
I've got to take somebody out to get in Madison or Barnes, though. That's the issue that I'm facing. Let's talk about Man City then, Tom, because we've probably all got at least two of Pep's side in, and they not only have a double game week this week with fixtures against West Ham, and then Wolves, they're both home games, but they also feature twice in game week 27, excitingly. Those matches are the derby against Man United and the aforementioned Southampton. So, Tom, who have you got and who should people have?
So I have got João Cancelo. I'm going to bring in Ruben Dias for this week. And I've also got Ilkay Gundogan. Regular listeners may remember that I had been resisting the lure of the Ilkay Gundogan bandwagon for as long as possible. But last week, I just thought, this is stupid. Why go Sterling over Gundogan? He's almost twice as expensive. Gundogan scoring more points. So I took Sterling out, brought Gundogan in, and what happened? Gundogan blanked. Sterling.
So you're the curse. That's who we have to thank.
There we go.
Say, as you said that, I'm thinking I must sell Gundogan now.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, there is a slight concern about Gundogan's influence now that Kevin De Bruyne is back. Is he going to get in the same advanced positions? Having said that, having watched the Arsenal game, he was still getting in those advanced positions. He seemed to be every bit as involved as he had been in recent weeks. As you say, City have got consecutive double game weeks, and also, quite uniquely, all four of those games are at home. And apart from that Man United game, they're all games that you would expect them to win without too much trouble. So, yeah, I think if you don't have three City players, that is something that could come back to bite you. The risk, as ever, with City is rotation. So it's about picking players that you think are as rotation-proof as possible. City's defensive record, we all know this season, has been sensational. And generally, I tend to think their defenders are less likely to be rotated than their midfielders and forwards, which is why I've gone for two City defenders as opposed to two midfielders or two forwards. I do worry about the potential of Sterling getting a hat-trick now that I've transferred him out, but I'm just going to have to live with that. West Ham, as we mentioned earlier, one of the teams who don't have a double game week this week, and I have actually cleared out all the West Ham players from my squad. So again, that is something else that I may come to regret, but we'll have to wait and see, I suppose.
No, but it seems a sensible thing looking at the fixtures, because not only do they only have one game coming up this game week, but they've got tough fixtures for the next four or five. Well, yes, I think six games are arguably a tough ones. Having said that, they sailed through an equivalent period back at the start of the season, so we shall see. If you were wildcarding right now, Sam and Kelly, which City players would you bring in?
Ooh, I think I'd still go double City defence, just because I'm not sure on the attack. I feel like their attack at the moment is in a bit of flux in terms of with Kevin De Bruyne coming back, Aguero coming back. So I'm happy to sit with my three players at the moment. But Sam, I'll let you say which three you'd bring
in. So which three do you have
know.
At the moment, sorry?
I have João Cancelo, John Stones and Ilkay Gundogan.
Okay.
I wish I had Ruben Dias over those defenders, but I just couldn't afford them. So I had to go for Stones.
So I have Dias. I'm very happy to own him. I have Gundogan and that's it at the moment. My issue is that I think the double up at the back is still there in terms of the fixtures. But my concern is the amount of rotation that's going to happen over the next few weeks, because we've got Champions League football, we've got a double game week in 26, a double game week in 27, we've still got the League Cup to come, we've still got the FA Cup from them as well. They're in so many different competitions that it feels to me like with the gap that they have at the top of the Premier League that they can afford to do some of their rotation in the Premier League if is necessary, particularly when we're talking about rotating Stones for Laporte. It's not exactly like we're going for a lesser player. Laporte is a fantastic option that Pep has available to him. So I think if I was going to go for three, I'd actually go Rogue and bring in Edison in goal, because he's probably the one in the back line that is guaranteed to start every single week alongside Dias, and then you're guaranteed those six clean sheet points. Now, yes, he doesn't have as many attacking upsides as the likes of Cancelo, but he did get an assist the other week, and we've seen that he is keen to take some penalties. So let's see what happens there. But I think, you know, for me, if it's the clean sheets that you want from your Man City defenders and you want a security of starts from them as well, then going for Edison might just be a good idea.
Okay.
How many points would Edison get if he scored a penalty as a goalie? The same as a defender scoring a goal?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know that for definite, though, but I would assume it's the same as the defenders.
This is one of the many reasons that I want this to happen. I really want Ederson to take a penalty.
So supposedly last time when he approached the spot, it was only to give some advice, but
yeah.
I wonder.
Yeah, I like no. his story.
A goalkeeper giving penalty-taking advice. If the goalkeeper's going forward, he's going to take it. He's not going to give advice.
No better... no better games warden than a former poacher or whatever. But, okay, well, so other things we could talk about from game week 26 include Leicester against Arsenal. They've then got Burnley away, Leicester. We have discussed a fair bit, Leicester, but it's one of the things that week on, week out, I can't believe that I'm still looking at my team going, oh, I must get some Leicester players in. I must get Maddison and Barnes in. It's a bit like, oh, the house is still burning. I must get around to putting that out. So is it Barnes, especially with the, I mean, he's scoring more points than Maddison, but also with the hip question, is it Barnes who is the must-have right now?
Yes, I think so. As a Maddison owner, obviously, if Maddison's fit, I won't do anything. But I still wish probably that I'd gone for Barnes a few weeks ago just because he just keeps producing. He's a little bit cheaper. His price has gone up to 6.9 this week, but 9 goals, 5 assists, and he's 1 point ahead of Ilkay Gundogan. So when we're talking about the form of him, I also feel like he's fixture-proof, as so many of these Leicester players are. He scored versus United, Liverpool, and now Villa. So I just think he looks brilliant. He, not only does he look for the assist, he goes for goal so often. So he's offering both sides, and it does look like when he plays well, Leicester play well. If I didn't have Maddison, I'd be bringing in Barnes. And if Madison's injured, I'm still going to be bringing in Barnes.
Right, okay. That sounds very reasonable. And what about an absolutely huge game in Premier League terms? And I'm not sure what your feeling is in as regards to FPL possibilities. That's Chelsea's clash with Man City. Chelsea follow that one up with a trip to Anfield. Rotation has been a big question since the arrival of Thomas Tuchel, and even before. Defensively, they've looked really solid, but it's a tough run of games coming up for Chelsea. Where do we stand now on the Blues?
I've actually brought in a Chelsea defender as a bit of a sort of random double game week punt. I've gone for Antonio Rudiger as a kind of long-term investment. He's only 4.6 FPL million, and yes, as double game weeks go, home to Manchester United and away at Liverpool doesn't exactly scream points bonanza. But as you say, Chelsea have tightened up at the back quite significantly since Thomas Tuchel came in. And their long-term fixtures are actually quite good. From game week 30 onwards, they're home to West Brom, away at Crystal Palace, home to Brighton, away at West Ham, home to Fulham. And when I was doing my wildcard last week, I wanted to make sure that I wasn't only looking at players who were going to score big in the next 2 or 3 weeks, but trying to look beyond that as well.
Okay.
So, yeah, and I mean, we are still in the early days of Thomas Tuchel's Chelsea tenure, and I suspect there will be lots of surprise decisions in terms of his selection in the weeks ahead. But you do get the sense that a spine is forming. I know that he called out Callum Hudson-Odoi last weekend, but then he then brought him into the team for the Champions League fixture against Atletico Madrid, and he looks like a player he's going to rely on. He's brought Antonio Rudiger into the team. Cesar Azpilicueta's come back into the team, and okay, perhaps not for this for this next couple of fixtures, but I think long term those Chelsea defenders could be decent investments.
Plenty to think about there. Let's next up take a longer view on things with some important news about fixtures from 27 onwards. Longview, everybody. As ever, the FDR chart available at fantasy.premierleague.com is essential reading because it paints a very clear and compelling picture of who's got what kind of fixtures. Now many, which is a big part of the discussion at the moment. As we know, there are very few teams that don't have doubles this time around. We now know that Man City have a double game week in 27 as well. They'll be at home to Saints. And we now also have an extra fixture slotted into the previously pretty barren-looking game week 29, which is not that far away now. And it is Aston Villa against Spurs. Is that it, Sam? Is there going to be anything else potentially added into game week 29?
29 there won't be now. They'll have to go afterwards because the other fixtures that need rearranging are all dependent on Europa League and Champions League commitments, and also the League Cup games that Spurs and Man City will miss need to be rearranged because they don't play in 30. So they'll need to be rearranged for later. But I can't, they won't go into 29 because it's internationals as well, isn't it? It's international break. So they can't put any more in the middle of the week unless they cancel the internationals, which doesn't look like it's going to happen.
Okay, so now we've got four fixtures on which to do that building for game week 29, which you guys were talking about before, which is kind of the backdrop to a lot of our moves at the moment. There's Villa, Spurs, there's Brighton against Newcastle, Fulham against Leeds, and West Ham, Arsenal. Does this change a lot your perspective, the fact that Villa, Spurs is in there?
I think for me, game week 29 without a free hit chip was looking a bit of a nightmare before that Aston Villa Spurs game went in there. There was a number of teams that you could invest in because they've got a decent fixture that week. For example, Brighton, but I didn't have any of them. So I was kind of using my transfers over the last few weeks to just bring in a couple of players to play in that game and hoping and praying that Aston Villa and Spurs would go in there too. As with two Spurs players already and with a plan for some Aston Villa assets ahead of this week, that will give me already, I think, 10 players going into game week 29, which means I don't have to free hit. It also means I don't have to, what we call, dead end our team by bringing in players that I wouldn't necessarily want after that free hit week and then having to use the wild card immediately to get back the players that I do want for the remainder of the season. So I think the fact that it's Spurs and Villa is huge because they are heavily owned assets and they will help out a lot of managers who don't have that free hit chip left.
Okay. Villa don't have bad fixtures between now and then, to be honest. There is the big question of what the absence of Jack Grealish is going to mean for them. While we wait for confirmation, Dean Smith originally talking about him being absent for maybe a month or so. Is it worth, though, us looking at Ross Barkley? Because will he be stepping into Grealish's shoes to an extent? Therefore, will he be potentially more involved in attacking returns?
I mean, he's the most obvious replacement for Jack Grealish. He's almost a sort of like-for-like kind of replacement, albeit he's not quite as effective in wide areas, but he is nowhere as effective when it comes to scoring goals, laying on assists, creating chances. So, I mean, you know, if Villa had a spectacularly comfortable run of fixtures, you might want to look at him. But I think from an FPL perspective, the gulf between him and Grealish is pretty massive. I have got Grealish in my squad. I'm going to replace him with Harvey Barnes for the double game week. And I do worry a little bit about Villa without Grealish because he is so key to the way they play. I've also got Ollie Watkins and I've got Emiliano Martinez between the posts. And, you know, Villa generally have been very solid defensively this season. But as an attacking force, I think not having Grealish could really hurt them.
I was a little bit worried about Villa even prior to the Grealish injury. Just didn't feel they'd quite hit the form that they were before. I think it was the game against Brighton where the red flag started to come for me because they literally kept in that game. They got a point because of Martinez. He's their best asset by far. If Villa don't have Grealish, that just completely then makes me want to take all of their players, apart from Martinez, out of their side. They've lost all three without him since the start of last season. And Ross Barkley at the weekend had a pretty forgettable day with, I don't think he created any chances or had any shots. So it does really affect the way I'm looking at the Villa attack. That said, I also think with the Grealish injury, we're going to have to kind of wait and see because Dean Smith did seem quite optimistic that he wouldn't be out for too long. So he could be back in time for game week 29. So this is probably one to monitor over the next few weeks.
Okay. Sam, as you attempt to claw back your position at the top, any other kind of trends that you've been noticing, looking at the FDR chart or things you're hoping to exploit, better runs of fixtures and that?
So for me, I took a really keen interest in Brighton last week. Brighton have been really solid defensively. Sanchez has been on really good form. And defensively, they have kept a number of clean sheets in games when you wouldn't necessarily have expected them against the likes of Spurs and Liverpool. Moving forward, they've got some nice fixtures. So in game week 26, although it's a single, they play against West Brom, who aren't scoring a lot of goals. Then it's a tough game in 27 against Leicester. But after that, they have Southampton and Newcastle, both really quite nice fixtures, both teams not scoring a lot of goals, particularly Newcastle in the absence of Callum Wilson. And that game happens in 29, where a number of FPL managers will be looking to ensure that they have players available to play in their side. So for me, Brighton are a team that you could buy into right now, bench them in 27 when they play against Leicester, and then enjoy the other nice fixtures that they have up until game week 29.
Who was your buy, Sam?
Lewis Dunk is the one to have if you're going to have a defender from Brighton, I think. He has the ability to offer you both clean sheets and attacking returns. If you can't quite get to his price tag, then Ben White is a nice surety of starts player. So you're guaranteed the clean sheets, if not the attacking returns. But one to just keep on the radar, Lamptey is back in training for Brighton now. Was a FPL favourite earlier on in the season because of his attacking prowess. So if he comes back into it over the next couple of game weeks, which I suspect he might, then have a look at him moving forward.
But Lamptey's kind of Brighton personified, isn't he? In that he flatters to deceive, kind of gets upfield, does nice looking things, but very, very rarely produces any kind of actual physical returns.
Yeah, he does have a tendency to frustrate a little bit, but I think the fixtures that they have coming up and the form that they've shown going into these fixtures, for me, it's enough to warrant buying into the Brighton defence, particularly because they're not that expensive.
Okay, excellent. Next up, let's find out who you are flagging up, listener, as the best differentials for double game week 26. Yes, this week's question on Twitter with the hashtag FPLpod was, who are the best differentials for double game week 26? What answers we got here? Well, FPL John says the best double game week differential is Trent Alexander-Arnold. Woof. Is this true?
You don't often hear as Trent Alexander-Arnold as a differential, do you?
Technically, he's not, because he's 14% ownership, which kind of takes him out of differential territory. 7.4, which is a pretty whopping price tag as well, and not much in recent form to suggest that he's worth investing in, unless I'm missing something here that FPL John has seen.
It's probably that Sheffield United fixture, isn't it?
Okay.
Because you're not buying into him against a Chelsea side that have been really solid defensively over the last few weeks. So it's probably for attacking potential against a Sheffield United side who are defensively worst off now because they've lost John Egan to injury as well. So I think there is scope there, but I just don't think you could justify paying that much money for somebody who's been so out of form for so long now.
Fair enough. Simon's got three options for us. Gareth Bale, who we talked about earlier on, Ricardo Pereira, and Michael Keane. Now, Pereira is playing in a much more advanced role now since his return. 5.9, so it's quite a lot to stump up for a defender. And 0.8% ownership, so that is low. I mean, that's attractive, isn't it? I was kind of worrying about how to get in Leicester players. Should I be saving up my fantasy pounds for Ricardo Pereira? And Michael Keane's the other one. 5.1 million, so a little bit cheaper. 5.7% ownership. Your thoughts?
I can understand the appeal of Ricardo Pereira, who has previously proven himself to be a bit of an FPL points machine. And as you say, particularly as he's going to be playing further forward, Leicester have got an attractive double up in this game week. So that makes sense to me. There's a slight risk of him not, I don't know. I'm not sure he's an absolute nailed on start in both of those games. He's still on his way back from injury. Leicester do have other options in the sort of fullback positions. But yeah, if he is going to play, I think that makes sense. Michael Keane, as we've said, Everton have got two very attractive fixtures. And yeah, Gareth Bale, brilliant in that cameo against West Ham. But I would be very surprised if he starts both of these games for Spurs.
My one issue with Everton as well is, having said I've got Dominic Calvert-Lewin, I'm quite happy to have him. They're still a little bit inconsistent at home. They've dropped points. What I always think of when I think of Everton is that home defeat to Fulham. They still have that potential in them. So although even when their fixtures look nice, I'm not totally sold on their defenders. And 5.1 for me at the moment is still quite a lot to invest in a defender that isn't guaranteed to provide returns.
On the subject of Everton, Luke flags up Leicester Barnes, yep, but also James Rodriguez, who's got two very appealing fixtures after that superb derby win over Liverpool, says Luke. James Rodriguez, anybody?
No.
Maybe. He's quite a lot of money to fit into that midfield. He either has a brilliant game or is very, very quiet. I think that's what frustrates me about James Rodriguez, is that you either get a bit of a haul or you get absolutely nothing from him. I don't know. I think he likes to turn it on for the big occasions and the big matches. And I think he was good in that Merseyside derby. But can he do it against the smaller sides, as Kelly said, in a home fixture where they just haven't been as good as they have been away from home? I'm not convinced. And I think to take out one of your big hitters, I'd much rather go for Harvey Barnes if I was going to take somebody out to fill a midfield position.
How do you feel about Lloydie's suggestion then? Jarrod Riederwald, 4.4 million, scored a goal against Fulham on his way to a 9-point haul in the reverse of Palace's first game week 26 fixtures?
I think if you've got a gap in your midfield and you've got less than 4.5 FPL million to spend, it makes sense to bring him in. I think he's the top scoring midfielder in that category. He starts pretty much every game. He's got an eye for goal. Palace have got decent fixtures this week. I did actually consider bringing in a Palace player. I can see the sense in bringing in Riedewald if you've got a gap somewhere.
All right. Well, from a Palace point of view, how about this from Marcus? Tarik Mitchell at 3.9 million back in the Palace team and those two home fixtures. This is a great shout.
Is he back in the Palace team, though? Is he? Mm-hmm. He's only started two of the last five games and he's competing with Patrick Van Aanholt. So I had Tarik Mitchell from the start. He's obviously a decent price, but I'm just not convinced he's going to start both of these games.
Yeah, I've got him and I'll be benching him for the same reason. He's a brilliant enabler. 3.9 million. Yeah, he'll just sit on my bench every week. And it's players like him that enable me to hopefully bring in Kane this week. So yeah, I wouldn't be rushing to bring him in thinking he's going to get loads of minutes and be guaranteed points, as Tom said. But he's good to enable you to get other players into your squad.
My issue with Crystal Palace is that they actually haven't been that good. They flatter to deceive when you look at that result against Brighton on Monday evening. They only had two shots in the box the whole game and they scored from both of them. So it's not exactly like Crystal Palace have been setting the world on fire in the absence of Zaha. So defensively, I think the guys are right. Mitchell may or may not start. He tends to start in the more difficult fixtures and it tends to be PVA in the slightly easier games where they want to attack a bit more. Riedewald, I think, looks good, but there hasn't been a lot of productivity coming out of Crystal Palace. So I wouldn't want to be wasting a transfer bringing in somebody that the team as a whole aren't scoring a lot of goals, because it just feels like a waste.
All right. Although, Sam, you do need to bring in some non-productive players to put on your bench to stop dropping all these massive...
That is true, James. I do. Yeah. I definitely do. Some non-playing ones, preferably.
Yeah. There you go. Excellent. All right. Well, after this, let's wrap up today's edition by discussing who we are going to be bringing in for Double Game Week 26 and, most importantly, who we're going to give that armband to. Very good. Transfers. How many are you going to make? What kind of points hit are you going to have? When are you going to make them? All important questions. Kelly?
Well, I was burnt a few weeks ago by bringing in Kane before Spurs played on the Thursday and whatever fixture it was that Kane got injured in. Sorry to bring that up and remind you of it, Sam. But I brought him in on the Wednesday night to avoid a price rise. And then, of course, he got injured and then I had to take a hit to get him out. So I've absolutely been burnt and learnt my lesson. So I'm going to wait until after Thursday night. The plan to be take out Ings, bring in Kane, but I'm about 0.2 short, I think. So I'm going to have to take a 4-point hit to do that. And it will either be Harry Maguire downgraded for another defender who plays twice but also potentially plays in 29, or it will be without my 29 head on Madison to Barnes if Madison is injured. So yeah, a lot hinges on Thursday night, really.
Crikey. Tom, what about you?
So my initial plan was to do Rafinha out, Harvey Barnes in, but I now need to replace Jack Grealish. So Rafinha's going to stay put and I'm going to bring Harvey Barnes in for Grealish. And I'm also going to take a 4-point hit and upgrade Pascal Stroik to Ruben Dias.
Nice. But also, don't go touching your Leeds players. Everything we've been saying is don't go touching your Leeds players.
Yes, but I would sooner have a Man City defender playing four times in the next 2 weeks than a Leeds defender playing twice in the next 2 weeks.
No, that's very, very true. Sam, what about you?
So I am finally going to make the very boring goalkeeper transfer that I've been putting off for the last few weeks and swap Nick Pope, whose form has been okay, but the fixtures aren't great for this double game week. And moving forward, they have some tough fixtures too. So I'm finally going to jump on the Martinez bandwagon and stop letting these Aston Villa clean sheets hurt me quite as much as they do. So that will be my transfer this
Unless
week.
Unless you leave him on the bench.
I'll definitely
like you did with Pope last
time.
Week. 9 points. What was it? 8 points you left on the bench with Pope?
I did. Yeah, I played my double game week keeper in 25. Should have played Pope over McCarthy, but I was expecting some save points from McCarthy and he just didn't deliver them. And actually, Pope's goal led a charmed life. He was very, very lucky to keep that clean sheet against West Brom. So Martinez will be coming in this week. I am tempted to make another change and take a -4, potentially taking Antonio to Watkins. Or maybe taking Suchek to Ross Barkley, because it means that I keep my 29 cover, but also bring in an extra double game weeker for this week.
It's a serious question, and I struggle with the maths on this, but points hit in a double game week feel like they almost pay for themselves. Is that a fallacy, or is there an element of truth in that?
It's a dangerous way of thinking, James. It's a slippery slope. You go down that route, who knows where you'll end up.
Never a better time to take a points hit than when you bring in somebody who's actually going to be playing twice. Even if they got, I don't know, 3-4 points, you'd still be in each game. You'd still be covering not only the price of bringing them in, but also, you know, whatever you missed out from the player you're transferring out.
I mean, there's likely to be a large number of hits taken this week, given that it is a double game week and it's the biggest one that we're going to have now between now and the end of the season. Mm. So a number of FPL managers will take points hits this week. Some will take 8 points, 12-point hits to get their team ready for this week. So if you are ever going to take a points hit, you are right in that this is probably the time to do it. But equally, not taking a points hit, if you can get away without taking them, will probably give you a, depending upon where you are rank-wise, for me, not taking a points hit ahead of last game week gave me a nearly 20k points rank rise. So actually, you know, when you think about it from that perspective, not taking points hits could just give you the boost that you need. So it's a balancing act, I think, depending upon the player that you're going to bring in. If they are guaranteed a clean sheet, if they are very likely to score because they are on the XG underachievers list from last week. So if it's a hit for Harry Kane, for example, probably worth it. If it's a hit for somebody that you might be taking out, a player that's got a decent single game week, might not be worth it.
Boo. Okay. Well, let's talk about captaincy then. Who's going to get the armband? Kelly?
If I bring in Harry Kane, which I will do, and having sat here for however long listening to Sam as well, of course I was going to end this podcast knowing I was going to bring in Harry Kane, because that will be the points hit that I will do to get in Harry Kane. If I'm going to do that, then I've got to captain him, haven't I?
Harry Kane at home to Burnley and then away at Fulham. Interesting. Tom, who's getting your armband?
I will also be giving the armband to Harry Kane. And as mentioned previously, I will be hitting the bench boost this week.
Okay. All right. Very nice for you. And it's a great time to be doing it. Sam?
I'm going to triple captain Harry Kane this week.
Why are you acting surprised, guys? That was not a big surprise. Harry Kane has a nice double game week. Right. Spurs super fan, triple captains, not a surprise for me.
I've been waiting for this game week for a long, long time. Spurs to have a double game week, Harry Kane to be fit and available at this point of the season. That doesn't come along very often. And in fact, this will be the first time I've ever triple captained a Spurs player in all of my years of playing FPL. Wow. I know, can't quite believe that. It's always gone on one of the Liverpool boys or one of the Man City boys or somebody like that. So this year, to have Harry Kane in the form that he's been in this season with two really nice fixtures, where he usually gets attacking returns, feels like a no-brainer to me. So yeah, triple captain Harry Kane is, as long as doesn't get injured, of course, in the Europa League.
And you're not concerned by Spurs's pretty abject form? I know you were saying that he underperformed the XG and therefore you'd expect that maybe to kind of return to a better balance this time, but Spurs, I mean, they're not clicking at the moment.
You could have just left it at Spurs.
They aren't,
yeah. But
they aren't, but I think that there are signs of recovery. I think we saw that in the Europa League and we saw that in the second half against West Ham last week. And I think we are getting to the point of the season where if Spurs don't turn it up a gear, they are going to run the risk of ending up not only trophyless again, but outside of the European spots. So there does have to be a turnaround. And I think these two fixtures might just be the ones that do that.
All right, and you're willing to bet your triple captain on it. Excellent. I'm surprised there's not been much mention of Dominic Calvert-Lewin in captaincy terms with a game against the defeat-friendly Southampton and then West Brom away as his two fixtures in game week 26. I suspect he might be sporting a colourful armband courtesy of AC Jimbu in this week's games. We'll be back next Thursday, a little bit later than usual because of the extended run of games, so do join us for that. But for now, it's many, many thanks to Tom Williams, Sam Bonfield and Kelly Summers. Best of luck with your double game weeks. And we'll speak to you in 7 days or so. Cheerio.